I'm glad to have you here.
I'm glad to be here.
I am myself a subscriber to Poets and Writers. This is
Great.
As you can see, my personal subscription.
I brought you the new issue. Have you seen this?
I have that issue. I was looking for it. I was going to bring that one in. I have it. Okay. Alan Gurganis, I was reading the interview with him. I also had interviewed Alan, I guess, last year, so I was interested in that.
Mm-hmm.
It was a much more in-depth interview than what I did. It's a wonderful magazine.
Thanks.
And strangely, I'm new to it because you can't find it on every newsstand, can you?
No, it's not on every newsstand. It's more in bookstores. The newsstands, I think, were a little reluctant because it's not glossy. You know, so we're doing better with bookstores now, but the newsstands, we still have a little ways to go. But we do have 4,000 copies going out to the to the bookstores across the country. Okay.
Yeah, I happen to be in a rather large magazine store, and there are some huge ones in New York, and they sell almost everything.
Mm-hmm.
And I just bumped into it. But I began to realize, after I read it, I thought it was a wonderful magazine, I began to realize that I'm not going to find this every place, so I mm-hmm. better subscribe to it.
Much better to subscribe. Much safer.
How many subscribers do you have?
We're up to 23,000 now.
That's pretty good.
And that's across the country, and we anticipate that'll go up, another 10,000 or so by the spring.
How does this fit in position with these other two magazines? I think it's Writer's Digest and The Writer out of Boston.
Mm-hmm. Our magazine is geared specifically to poets and fiction writers, and most specifically to writers who are starting out. Although the articles that we have, I think, pertain to writers at all levels, we have very, very specific information that's of particular use to writers who are just getting underway. We have lots of information about grants and awards for writers, deadlines for those grants and awards, along with all the articles and interviews that are in every issue.
Well, there's a wonderful article. I'm a erstwhile would-be writer myself. And there was a wonderful article, I think two issues ago, about rejection.
Mm-hmm.
And it really summed up everything that someone who is struggling to write has to know. Isn't that true?
It is true, and I think what the magazine does in that article, and I think throughout, is to sort of give realistic hope to writers. We don't paint a rosy picture. I think we're quite honest about what it means to be a writer, to struggle as a writer, both in terms of one's craft and also from the business side. We're very down to earth, sort of nuts and bolts oriented. And what we hear from writers is that they like the magazine because it enables them to identify with and take some inspiration from the writers who are struggling just like them. They're not alone, I think, and that's one of the main virtues of the magazine.
Now, what is your position with your executive director?
I'm the executive director of the whole organization, and the magazine is one of our programs.
All right. Well, tell me about Poets and Writers and how it all began.
Well, we're a service organization for writers. We're a national organization based in New York City. We started 20 years ago. This is our 20th anniversary, 1990, in New York, running a program that pays fees to writers when they give readings at libraries, colleges, bookstores, or conduct workshops in a variety of settings. So we started with a very modest program that supported fee payments to writers so that they went home with a larger check after they gave a reading at one of the organizations that we worked with. From there, we grew and became an information resource. The organizations that we were working with wanted to get in touch with the writers. So we began to keep track of where they were, and in fact, we're the only organization doing that. It's very hard to get that information from publishers. They're busy publishing the books and marketing the books. So we began a directory of poets and fiction writers so that if an organization or an editor or a colleague wanted to get in touch with a writer, they could call us, and they still can call us. And we have close to 7,000 writers now listed in our directory.
I should get that myself just for my BookBeat series. It's been on many years, and I track down writers all the time, and I usually mm-hmm. go through publicists, and sometimes I get the information, sometimes I don't, sometimes I just dial blank. Usually they're listed. Usually you can find them, but
mm-hmm.
That would be a nice, concise way. Well, I ought to get that.
Yep.
A nice, concise way of of tracking down people.
It's all out there.
Can we go back just a little bit?
Sure.
Who actually formed Poets and Writers as a group?
The organization was started by a woman named Galen Williams, who was running the poetry series at the 92nd Street Y. And she took on this readings workshops project, and it grew to the point where it needed to become its own organization. It could no longer be housed at the Y. And with initial support from the New York State Council on the Arts, we began. And Galen started it, ran it out of her apartment, had a little office in her apartment on right around the corner here on 54th Street, and started it. You know, she and one or two assistants began the program, and it's grown quite a bit, you know, from then. But that was the impetus for it.
Now, in addition to the grants and the magazine, what other functions, and the directory, of course, what other functions do you have?
Well, we have a call-in information center so that anyone may call us if they have questions about how to get published, where to find an agent, where to find a writing conference. And this is a free service that we provide. Anyone can call. We're not a membership organization. We provide that service to anyone who wishes to take advantage of it. We also sponsor readings throughout New York State, which is how we began, and we just began 2 years ago a program in California modeled on the New York program, which gets money into the pockets of writers when they give readings. And our newest program is called the Writers Exchange, through that program we bring writers from a state to New York City, where we set up a reading for them and provide introductions to editors, agents, and publishers. They stay here for 3 days, meet with a variety of people, and then go to one other state where we run a similar program for them. They give a reading and introduce them to members of the literary community in that state. And this is for beginning writers, people who have published no more than one book.
Now, you mean if I'm in Bakersfield, California, I could call you and say, look, I've just written this dynamite science fiction novel, and I need an agent. Who do I go to?
Right. That's exactly the kind of question that we can help with.
But you can't really single out a specific agent.
What we would do in that case is provide some general information about how one goes about looking for an agent, what one should do in evaluating agents, and we also have a book on agents, and we would recommend that book to the caller.
This book lists the agents?
It lists agents who will take unsolicited manuscripts, and it provides very detailed information on how you go about looking for an agent and evaluating agents and what one can expect from agents, so we would recommend that book.
Now, do you, when you subscribe to Poets and Writers, is this also joining the organization, or is it just getting the magazine?
It's just getting the magazine.
Is there a separate way to join the organization as such?
No, we don't have members. We do have friends of Poets and Writers, you know, but we're not a membership organization. We're a service organization. We publish the magazine and make a number of other services available to the public.
Mm-hmm. Now, as executive director, what is your role with the organization?
Well, my role is to make sure all the programs are running the way that they should be running. I do a lot of work with our board of directors. I make sure that the budget is in good shape. I assist with fundraising and provide general direction and planning for the organization.
You're the chief paid staff person, I would assume.
Yes.
Do you have a full staff, full complement of people?
Yes, we have a full staff running all of the programs. There are 18 in all.
Paid staff people.
Paid staff people. You know who? You know each of them works in a particular program.
The board of directors, I would assume, is advisory. However,
board of directors is advisory, but more than advisory, they are responsible for the organization. They have fiduciary responsibility, and they have a lot to say about planning and programs of the organization.
Well, what is your background? Are you also a writer?
I am a writer. I knew about Poets and Writers before I worked at Poets and Writers. I was teaching up in Massachusetts, and a fellow poet said, do you know about Poets and Writers? You should. You should get the magazine, and you should get the directory. It'll be a good way for you to keep in touch with what's going on. So I followed her suggestion and subscribed to the magazine, got to the directory, and found that there were resources and people in my area in Massachusetts that I was not aware of. When I came back to New York, I volunteered at Poets and Writers. I felt it was a good organization, and I wanted to help. And so I began as a volunteer in 1977.
And the rest is history.
And the rest is history. And I am a writer, and I appreciated the, you know, the services before I began to work at Poets and
Writers. You're a published poet.
I am.
Tell me about that.
Well, I actually was beginning to write at the time that I met this colleague in Massachusetts. And I've published in magazines, and I actually teach a course in writing. So I maintain my writing and teaching along with, you know, running the organization.
Where do you teach?
I teach at an organization called the Writers Studio, which is in
New York. That's with the 92nd Street Y?
It's independent. It's its own organization, and it's devoted entirely to the teaching of writing.
But it works out of the Y?
No.
No?
No.
I just had the brochure. I thought it was
maybe a similar name, but it's the Writers Studio is separate from any Y.
And so you teach workshops?
Teach workshops.
Poetry workshops.
Actually, poetry and fiction.
Uh-huh. Now, when are these held? I don't want to get too far away from poetry and writers, but I just...
I teach in the evenings, two evenings a week.
And where are they held?
We rent space from Poets and Writers, okay? And so we use the conference room at Poets and Writers to teach those courses.
All right. Tell me about the writing craft. It seems I have been doing this broadcast now for many years, and every week I talk to writers, some of the really great writers of our generation, and I get so many conflicting reports about the craft. Some people just love it, and some people just hate it, but they do it.
Mm-hmm.
What impulse is there that makes one want to do something as seemingly discouraging as being a writer, and especially a poet?
Mm-hmm. Well... I think it springs primarily from the desire to communicate, to say something in a way that can only be said for that person through the written word. Profound desire to communicate, and one must do it. I don't think it's something that is so much a conscious choice as a calling. It's almost biological. You must do it.
That's interesting. Is it much the same impulse that, say, a painter might have?
Mm-hmm. I believe so. I'm not a painter, but I think that painters and photographers and composers share something, a need to communicate, a need to express themselves, and for writers, it's through language.
What about the writer versus the publisher? I've heard so many horror stories. I saw on The Wire, and I also was in The Times this morning, about Bret Easton Ellis. His novel, at the last minute, was pulled away from Simon & Schuster. At the last minute, it was supposed to go out next month.
Mm-hmm.
It would seem to me Simon & Schuster had plenty of time. I'm not asking you for a judgment on this particular case, but it would seem to me Simon & Schuster had plenty of time to make up their mind about this book. And they ripped it away. The book is going to be ultimately published, no question about that. But that's only one example of the seeming war between publishers and writers.
Mm.
And it goes back to, I've been reading a lot of Ambrose Bierce. And in his day, it was a war between writers and publishers. He wrote a satirical story once about the writers all going on strike against the publishers. And he made it sound like a newspaper strike, you know, where publishers' offices were bombed, things like that. Tell me a little bit about that. You know, there are things like writers' unions. I can't remember the names of them, but they don't really have much impact because there's no organization within the publishing world.
Mm. Well, I think it's fair to say that writers and publishers need each other. And it's also, I think, accurate to say that there has historically been tension between writers and publishers. There are organizations that look after the needs of writers, and one of them is the Authors Guild, that's based in New York, national organization that does help writers with questions of contract and, you know, fairness in dealings with their publishers. I believe Mr. Ellis is a member of the Authors Guild, and I'm sure he's receiving assistance from them.
That lot of good that's going to do.
Yeah, I mean, he, as you say, I think he probably will publish his book, This is one of those cases where the tension between publisher and writer is quite obvious.
But there doesn't seem to be any standards, as far as I know. Advances can be none, or they can be something, or they can be a multi-million-dollar advance. It just strikes me as very uneven.
Mm-hmm.
And also, it seems to me there seems to be a cavalier way that publishers treat authors, manuscripts. I published a novel in 1988, St. Martin's Press. I went in to see my editor, and on her desk were manuscripts up to the ceiling. and she picked up one, and this was a bound manuscript. The guy had a, it was a typescript manuscript, but he went out and had a printer bind it. Don't ask me why. And it was very heavy. It had heavy leather cover on it, you know. And she said, I'm not even going to read this, you know. It just went into the trash. And it just struck me that that might have been a good manuscript. I don't know. It's probably unlikely. Somebody thinks his words are so good that they have to be bound in leather so that nobody can make any changes. Is probably not very good. But it just strikes me, it just struck me that they're bombarded with manuscripts. Maybe that's why. They're bombarded with so many manuscripts that they just can't devote any attention to them, or much attention to them.
That may be the case. I think, you know, writers also need to take care as best they can in terms of which publishers they choose to submit their work to. I mean, there are publishers that are smaller, and I'm not saying smallness in every case is a virtue, but in terms of the care that one is going to receive from the editorial department, in terms of the promotion of the book, there are choices. I mean, there are very large publishers within walking distance of this studio, and there are a variety of smaller presses, independent presses around the country that work in a different way.
Should a writer expect a living wage if he wants to be a writer?
I wouldn't, no. I wouldn't go in expecting it. I think it's you know, the average, you know, wages for a literary writer are not, you know, going to support, you know, one's, you know, rent and other living expenses. I mean, most writers do other things, and they write, and the ones that we read about are not the norm. Most writers are teaching or driving a cab or waitressing or, you know, doing something other to make ends meet.
Even well-known writers, in fact.
Even well-known writers, they're doing something else. They may be teaching.
Yeah.
They may be you know, holding an editorial position. Even well-known writers, that's correct.
I mentioned Ambrose Bierce a minute ago. There was a wonderful anecdote in this book I was reading. Henry Holt had given a lecture around the turn of the century, and he advised the audience and the writers in this group that they should write, no question about that, but they should also find employment outside of their writing to finance it. And Bierce remarked, he said, I wonder if the melancholy Mr. Holt ever thought about getting employment outside of his publishing. So I began to think about that, but it's tough. There's no question about it. Do you, in Poets and Writers, the magazine, do you give strategies to help writers?
I think what we do is we provide a some insight into the way in which books are published, the way in which they're marketed, so that we provide, I think, introductions to a number of magazines and book publishers, so that writers can get a sense, at least, of those presses and can make a little bit of a more informed choice about where they're going to, you know, send their material. I think if you read the magazine and you read the stories of writers who are struggling in the same way that you are, you begin to get a more realistic picture of what the business is like. I think that is perhaps the main virtue, okay, of the magazine, that it arms you as a writer. It gives you some sense of what's out there. You're not as innocent anymore after you've read the magazine.
Do you have the courage to speak your mind? For example, would it be possible for you to take a position, say, on the Simon & Schuster and the Bret Easton Ellis situation?
I don't know enough about it, frankly. I mean, I don't know.
At some point, would you take a position on that and say, this is something for a writer to look out for? Or the publisher was definitely wrong? Or would you go that far? Would you risk the ire of Simon & Schuster, for example, by criticizing them?
Depending on the facts of the case, yes.
You would?
Mm-hmm. I'd have to know more about the case, though. I don't know enough yet.
So Poets and Writers wouldn't be just a house organ for publishers as well as writers, just telling you the good things.
No, not necessarily. I mean, we do see ourselves, I should say, though, in honesty, that we see ourselves as a service organization. As opposed to a crusading organization, and it's not typical for us to take sides in a case. I think in that case, you know, the Authors Guild, to which Mr. Ellis belongs, okay, you know, would be a more appropriate place to look for an opinion on it. But I wouldn't rule out Poets and Writers having something to say about it either.
Now, Elliot Figman, I understand there's a big gala celebration coming up. Tell me about that.
There is. We're celebrating our 20th anniversary on December 6th, and we're very happy that Jacqueline Onassis and Bill Styron have agreed to be our honorary chairs for the evening. They will be there, and Mr. Leonard Riggio from B. Dalton Bookseller is our chair. We expect about 800 people to come down to the columns for the event, and we're expecting to have a good party and a good celebration for our 20th anniversary.
Well, you certainly deserve it. What lies ahead for poets and writers in the future?
We will be expanding our programs more nationally. The kind of program that we introduced in California a couple of years ago, we hope to introduce in other states.
I'm sorry, what is that program?
That's the Readings Workshops program, which has operated in New York State since we began, and we ran a pilot program in California starting in 1989. I would like that program to expand so that writers across the country can take advantage of that.
Mm-hmm.
We'll also be getting the word out about our services, the magazine and our information service. I think that will go out more nationally as well. So I think the main thrust over the next 2 to 5 years will be to offer our services on a more national basis.
Well, my last question has you've been in the business for a while. Do you think there are as the industry, the writing industry, the publishing industry grown? Are there more writers today and publishers today than in the past?
There certainly are more writers. I mean, the number of writers in our directory has grown consistently over the years. We're close to 7,000 now, and that 7,000 does not in any stretch of the imagination represent all the writers in this country. But the growth there, I think, represents the growth nationwide. As far as publishers go, I don't know a number, but there certainly are more independent presses springing up and maturing over the last 5-7 years.
I understand that there has been a considerable consolidation of publishers, so there are fewer imprints.
Yes.
But I also know that there are more regional publishing houses and university presses than ever before, too, so it's kind of hard to... Of course, the problem with some of these regional presses, I don't think they pay anything, do they?
Well, no, I don't know if that's true.
We've all already established that authors shouldn't expect to get paid for their work.
Yeah. Well, I think writers can expect to get paid for their work. I just don't think writers should expect to live from their work, to make a living from their work solely.
Well, it was certainly nice talking to you. It's a wonderful magazine and a group that sounds to me as though it is extremely helpful and a very positive influencer writers. Elliot Figman, thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
All right, let me...